Welcome in, Eagles fans, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. It's Louis DiBiase joining you in studio. It is midnight. We are 10 minutes removed from one of the best games I've ever watched as an Eagles fan, and that's including all of the playoff games last year. The adrenaline is pumping. Louis DiBiase again in studio. Gino Camilleri, welcome back to the show, dude. We are recapping the Eagles' 18-12 victory against the Falcons in the season opener. And Gino, what a freaking way to start this season. The same way they ended the Falcons season last year, a goal line stand. Jalen Mills ends it for the Falcons last year, stopping Julio Jones on the right side on a goal line stand. And then this year, it's Ronald Darby's turn to step up, hitting Julio as he goes out of bounds. And Julio caught it this time, man. But Darby holds, and the Eagles get a grinded out type of win that I was saying throughout the week. It's got to be a messy game. This defense has to step up, and man, did they do that.
It's great to be back talking to you, Lou. And
absolutely.
Great that football's back, too, and it's great that the Eagles are 1-0. And man, oh man, I can't take many more of these Atlanta games. I don't want to see Atlanta for the rest of time. I had Vietnam War like flashbacks to the middle of January when it's a goal line stand, fourth and goal, and Julio goes up for the ball. That was phenomenal. I have to give a round of applause to Ronald Darby for playing
Absolutely. Outright
one of the greatest games at corner I've ever seen in the Midnight Green. That was unbelievable, and for it all to come down to him one-on-one with arguably the greatest receiver in the game is bravo to him for doing it. He won us the game, I would say. That was unbelievable. My resting heart rate's up over 30 beats per minute.
Same,
I'm not
dude.
Going to bed anytime soon. Let's keep rolling here.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing is, it looked like the Atlanta Falcons offense was having their way with the Eagles defense on that drive, and even the play before in the red zone where Corey Graham and Rodney McLeod are doubling Julio in the slot. I'm like, no, get Graham off him, because the Eagles are playing man coverage for the majority of the time. Like, are they really about to let Graham cover this guy man-on-man? And Julio was, they were playing off on him. He was having his way with the Eagles defense. But again, Darby, who, you know, I'm a huge Rasul Douglas guy. So seeing him make that pick was, it got me extremely fired up. You saw the text I was sending you. He's a ball hawk, and Douglas makes big plays, and he comes in for one play when Darby comes out covering Julio Jones, and he makes the pick. And so people know how big I was on Rasul Douglas all summer, to probably the extent of devaluing Ronald Darby. And I'm going to, right now on the podcast, eat a lot of crow, because that guy looked like a cornerback one this year in that game. I know Julio had a lot of catches. He had, his numbers were high. I think, what did he have, over 160 receiving yards?
But 169,
yeah.
Yep.
He made, Darby made some great plays on the ball. He had a couple nice plays against the run, which when you're getting out to the edge like that and the corner's the only ones left unblocked, a guy like Darby, he has to make those tackles, and he was the one I was concerned about doing that the most. So he was making tackles, big plays, and then in the clutch in the red zone, something he struggled with against New England in the Super Bowl, he steps up against a bigger target, like you said, one of the best receivers in the league. And Ronald Darby, to me, there was a lot of good performances, amazing performances from this defense, but Ronald Darby, to me, has to have the MVP on the defensive side of the ball. He looked like a player that wants to get paid this year, and it's not just him, but to make the transition to the offensive side, Jay Ajayi, Gino, looked like another guy that wanted to get paid.
Yeah, I said it. You can check my Twitter feed. I said feed Ajayi, and every time they fed him, I just pointed to that tweet, because we said it all offseason. The player that ran the hardest was Jay Ajayi. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And once they realized that they were running the inside zone with Sproles and that wasn't working, it was time to go north and south and get in Ajayi that ball. Giving him that workload, getting him in a rhythm is exactly what they needed to do, and that's what you want out of your premier back. And yeah, let's toss a little Corey Graham in there, and Corey Clement and a little Darren Sproles in there to spice things up, but
right. Feed
Ajayi. He is the man. Everybody has their individual skill set, but Ajayi can take that load. He did it in Miami. You saw what he could do with it last year, and he did it today. He put that offense on his back when it was struggling outside of Aguilar, I would say.
15 attempts, 62 yards, and 2 touchdowns for Ajayi. Looked like he was the red zone back today over Corey Clement. But it wasn't just Ajayi. And, you know, before we even get into that, Ajayi wasn't getting the ball in the first half. Some people were saying maybe it was a foot injury, but he did not look like someone that was being held back by an injury. And in the second half, and I think the Eagles learned their lesson about not using him. It was Darren Sproles, and more Darren Sproles in the first half. And although he made some clutch plays, including that gritty third down conversion on that swing route from Nick Foles, getting to the sticks, Sproles had a good game as well. He made some really nice punt returns as well, but it was Ajayi that I was getting frustrated that he wasn't in the game, and then they unleash him in the second half, and when he got, man, just to that second level, he is a player that is impossible to bring down. He looked explosive, he looked faster than he did last year, and he has been the Eagles' most consistent, most efficient runner since he got traded to the Eagles last year, averaging almost, 6 yards a carry last year in the season. He is a player that we talked about Darby. Ajayi and Darby are two players that had the biggest games for the Eagles week one, and it's ironically the two players that are going to be unrestricted free agents this year that are going to try to cash in.
Yeah, they're both balling out after one game, man. That was phenomenal performance by both of them. They played like veterans. I mean, they're young. Yep. They're young guys. I don't think Darby's any older than 25, and I think Ajayi's slightly north of 25, if I'm not mistaken. But
he's around, I think he was 24 last year. I think he's exactly 25. So
yeah,
young
so
still.
Spot on. Yeah, he's still young, and these guys stepped up when their team needed them, and those are the players you need. Those are the Pro Bowl / All-Pro type plays that you need to make when you're defending Julio Jones. If Ronald Darby plays like that every single game guarding the best receiver on the opposing team, he's going to get first team All-Pro honors. There's no doubt about it. If he did that with Julio Jones, you saw what Jalen Mills went through over there, and he went through hell trying
to
guard
another double
Julio.
Move.
Yep. Oh yeah, it's disgusting that he still cannot figure out how to not fall for that. But yeah, you saw what happened when Julio went to the other side of the field. He was non-existent basically in one in man coverage. They were playing man a majority of the game, like you said, until they realized at the end, hey, maybe we should lock down arguably one of the best offensive weapons in the league.
Yep.
But yeah, Darby played out of his mind. Ajayi put the team on his back when he needed it. I want to see Ajayi just break off one of those quick handoff runs like he almost did, and he always gets shoestring tackled, and one of these days he's going to take it for 75 yards, and I'm going to be happy for him, because after today, he deserves all the praise in the world.
And it wasn't just Ajayi, too. Like we mentioned, the other running backs. The running backs carried us in that second half on the offense because, I mean, Nick Foles, look, I think he had just a little over 100 yards, no touchdowns, an interception. Nick Foles was not sharp today. I thought he got a little better in the second half, got into a rhythm, but it was a real conservative passing approach in this game. And, you know, Nelson Aguilar, dude, by the way, a PPR nightmare. He really stepped up today in the game, but even Aguilar wasn't getting chances down the field because Foles' attempts were going 3 to 4 yards down the field. He had, I think, 8 catches for 38 yards. He was averaging under 4 yards a reception. So he stepped up against the Atlanta corners, and he played well on the outside, but the passing game really was non-existent. It was because Nick Foles had another off game. He looked closer to what he was in the preseason than in the playoffs. And Zach Ertz with 3 drops in one game.
I don't know what he was
he
doing
never
out
has
there.
Drops. There was that big third down conversion on 3rd and 12. He drops that, goes right in between his hands. There was a couple other ones too that he dropped, and that was the matchup I was looking for on offense to see. It's strength versus strength. Can he get by Keanu Neal and Deion Jones? And he didn't win that battle, but the running back stepped up. Corey Clement's big play to set up the Ajayi touchdown. And, wasn't that a flashback to the Super Bowl run he had against New England where he cuts the wrong way and you're like, oh, he's got one man to beat. If this is LeSean McCoy, he's breaking this for a touchdown. And Clement couldn't get it, but nonetheless, he broke off that big run. He hit that hole. And Sproles before that was converting third downs and making big plays in the passing game and running game. This three-headed monster running back was the key on offense in that second half push to take that lead.
You're 100% correct there. I mean, Atlanta's had success defending that 12 personnel in the past, and they've actually struggled in trying to cover 11 personnel. But when you don't have Alshon Jeffrey and Aguilar, who's strictly a slot receiver, and Mike Wallace, who decided to play maybe 50%, he was not, I don't know what he was doing out there. He was not finishing his routes. He really disappointed me this game. I'm a little upset with how he played, I would say.
But, and he didn't show much in the preseason either.
No, yeah, I know. And I, when is it time to just give Shelton those routes? But that's a discussion for a different day. But yeah, the running back stepped up when they needed it. I just want to say one thing. Can we please stop handing Darren Sproles on the inside zones? I had flashbacks to Chip Kelly's offense with Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
Can we please stop doing that? He knows his role. Doug knows his role. All the offensive coaches know his role. He does it well. Put him in space. Get him lined up on a linebacker. Let him do the two-way go. Play the leverage. That's his spot. He's not. Give Ajayi those hands off. Give Clement those hands off. And I think they realized that as the game progressed, Doug took notice and he made those adjustments a lot like he did in the playoff game last year. And I applaud him in that second half. Nick struggled. It's kind of tough when you don't have Alshon out there and Zach Ertz, your second best receiver, you could say, isn't catching anything. It's only so much Nelly can do in the slot without any help, really. But yeah, I applaud all three of those running backs. It was tough to work the wheel route in this game because those safeties and linebackers all can cover. It's just crazy that all of them run like 4.4s. It's outrageous. But yeah, it helped that Keanu Neal went out, but I applaud them all. That was a good game by the three backs.
Yeah, and I was surprised by what Doug was throwing out there on offense with they were running a lot of three receiver sets and not a lot of, I mean, I know Goddard, obviously, the interception went right off his hands. He took contact and the pick really set up the Falcons to get back in that and regain the lead. But Goddard didn't play a whole lot, and you didn't see Sheldon Gibson when they ran three receivers. It was DeAndre Carter who finished with one catch, and I don't know. I thought they were going to run some different packages. I thought you'd see Sproles more in the slot, maybe try to implement the two tight end sets more, and it didn't really work that way, where DeAndre Carter played the majority of the snaps. So the receivers outside of Aguilar were non-existent. That includes Zach Ertz and Goddard, and this running game took over. And you know what? It just shows this was a team effort in this game. It took everything to beat this Falcons team that's really good, and they suffered a lot of injuries today. Keanu Neal went down. McKinley was down at one point. I think Deion Jones got banged up. They were just dropping like flies everywhere on the Atlanta defense, but it took all of that for the Eagles to eke out, and it took a last-second play for them to eke out this win. And it wasn't by any help of Nick Foles, man. And Carson Wentz, I know the report before the game that Ian Rappaport said Carson Wentz might miss several weeks. Despite Nick Foles playing like that against Atlanta, I'm still confident that this team can win games. We play Tampa Bay next week, Indianapolis. If the Eagles really want to be conservative with Wentz still, although I want him on the field as soon as possible, I'm not going to really bat an eye if Foles still plays a couple more weeks, considering that was the toughest game they have in the first wave of this schedule. They had to get that game against Atlanta this Thursday night, because the next couple games, the Eagles are going to be heavy favorites in those, and I'm fine with letting Wentz continue to build up the strength, limit the chance of a re-rupture, and go from there. And that today instilled more confidence in me rather than less, despite Foles' performance, because of how good the defense looked and how confident I am right now in these three running backs. And the offensive line, too. We talked about the running back success.
I was just
going
to say that. We have to give them applause.
Jason Peters
for sure
looks just as good as he always has.
I missed him so much.
Same.
He is a brick wall, that guy.
The offensive line stepped up. They continued where they left off against New England. So, and that to me, I don't know how you're feeling about the Wentz situation after Foles' performance tonight, but the entire team effort and Doug Peterson in the second half, I think the play calling got better. I'm still confident that if they want to be conservative with this, I'm okay with it, because I think they can win the next three games without him. Because after Buccaneers and Colts, then they play Tennessee, and those are three winnable games the Eagles should be heavy favorites in.
I agree 100% there. This was the game I wanted Carson to play, because I figured our offense would struggle and the defense was going to be put in a big spot like they were, and they stepped up again. And time after time, they have. And one of these times, the offense is going to have to step up, you know, and I feel better with Carson doing that. But like you said, we are going to be they're going to be heavy favorites going in these next three games. There's no doubt about it. You have a Jameis Winston-less Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
That's right.
And the Indianapolis Colts team under Frank Reich, who knows how they're going to do. Their roster isn't the strongest. And then that fourth game you said was Tennessee. That'll probably be the biggest test, but I'm confident our defense could win that game too. And Rappaport said he should be back around November. October, and that Titans game's right at the cusp. So if you have to rush, I don't think you have to rush him back because I think you can win all three games without him. But if he's healthy and let him play that Tennessee game and don't throw him into the fire right away against Minnesota, I would say.
I mean, if you could start off 4-0 without Carson Wentz and continue to let him rest, I'm keeping him
Doug
out
Peterson
until they
deserves coach of the year just from that.
I agree. I'm with you. And I thought, again, Peterson's play calling got better as the game went on, but that, yeah, again, I think with how well the team played overall, I'm confident with or without Carson Wentz right now, this team looked ready once again to be a dominant team in the NFL. Let's take one quick break before we come back and continue to recap the whirlwind, the thriller that was the Eagles' 18-12 victory in Philadelphia against Atlanta tonight. We'll be right back right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The adrenaline is still kicking in for myself and Gino as we recap this Eagles 18-12 victory. We talked about how good Jay Ajayi was, Gino. We talked about how good Ronald Darby was, the running backs, the offensive line. It was a complete team effort. But you know what? We haven't talked about probably the biggest moment of this game, and it wasn't the Darby stop. It wasn't the Jay Ajayi touchdown or the Corey Clement run. You know, the Eagles ran the Philly special again. This was, I never in a million years thought this play would ever be run again on this Eagles offense just because of the significance the play had to last year's team. Doug Peterson even coming out and saying that he retired it. If he went out and said he retired it just to throw people off, that Doug Peterson deserves Coach of the Year just from that because he pulls it back out at a perfect time when the Eagles offense is getting nothing going. The fans are totally disinterested in the offense's attempt. And then they pull out the Philly special at midfield with Nelson Aguilar this time replacing Trey Burton, throws a perfect pass to Nick Foles, who catches it once again in stride and gains a first down for the Eagles. I just in caps tweeted, oh my gosh, they just did the Philly special again, because it's week one. They pull it in week one. It's not even maybe halfway through the year they pull it back out. It's the first game since they did it against New England. It was, I didn't even care. I tweeted out, I didn't even care if they won after that. The fact that they pulled that off made my night.
That game fully encapsulated the beginning and the end of their playoff run with the fourth goal stand.
Yep.
And then the Philly special.
It was an exact replica of what we went through in the playoffs last year.
It's pretty crazy to see the similarities between that. But Doug Peterson, he was up and down play calling throughout the game. But my God, does that man know how to call a play when you least expect it. I would love to know if there was a prop bet that the Philly special would be run again this game, because
a lot of money on that.
Oh, yes. I don't think anybody on this side of the globe or on the other half of the globe would have ever expected that to happen. I for sure didn't. And to run it to perfection again, took the entire momentum, shifted it in Philly's favor, got some points on the board when you really needed them. And Doug, once again, I can't doubt anything he does. The only thing I would complain about Doug this game was challenging that 4 yards, but to pull out the Philly special, that just shows you the brilliance of what he can do and how amazing he actually is as a coach.
I'm surprised they used Nelson Aguilar as the guy to do the Philly special this time. I mean, we always thought maybe Greg Ward would be the favorite if he ended up making the roster, but he gets cut, and Aguilar's the guy that steps up. And again, Aguilar was a player we talked about throughout the week that was going to exploit a weakness in the Falcons' defense, which was in the slot against Poole, and I think he took advantage of that. But then, at one point, he ended up being the more efficient passer on the Eagles' offense as well. Aguilar did everything tonight, and I think it was cool that he was the guy to pull off the Philly special in the second part of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he balled out on offense. You saw what he could do when he gets in space with handoffs. Like, this is
they used him as a running back too?
Yeah, this is the player they drafted. And Chip Kelly, applause to him. He saw it. It just took him a couple years to figure it out. And just think of how good he can be when Alshon is taking the number one corner coverage, you know? Mm-hmm. That's just going to open things up, and I can't wait to see what he can do. I really think he can be close to a 1,000-yard receiver this year. Bravo to him again. It just the evolution of where he's come from his first year to now is incredible, and he knew he had to step up. Was he going to crack under the pressure? Who knew? And he ended up stepping up in a big place when other guys around him didn't, you know? That's pretty impressive.
He once again had multiple third down conversions today. He is one of the best, if not the best, third down wide receiver in the league. Last year, I think Carson Wentz's QBR was over 130 when targeting Nelson Agholor on third downs. So he converted two early on in the game. He converted the one run in the backfield for a first down on third down. It just, like you said, it's incredible how far he's come to where it was just little moments that he couldn't step up, and now in the biggest moments when the team needs him most, he is the go-to guy. And like you said, when Alshon Jeffrey comes back and, you know, relieves some of the pressure from Agholor in coverage, it's going to bode, you know, it's going to be huge for Agholor. But I really think Agholor is going to be the Eagles' best pass catcher on the team this year. I think he's going to become more valuable than both Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz. He has that kind of upside. He showed that kind of upside again today. And look, they're both, to me, Alshon Jeffrey still a wide receiver one as well, but I think Agholor is going to emerge as someone that teams look at as a starting a number one wide receiver for teams. I'm that high on him this year, and I think he showed the start of something like that in this 2018 season.
You're not wrong at all, and if Ertz was producing at the rate he could have, maybe Agholor would have had a bigger game because you would have had to shift coverage to him, you know, but to know that he was the guy, and Atlanta's defense to know that he was the guy who was going to get the ball, and he still walked away with eight receptions, not for many yards, but he got catches when it counted. That's all that matters. Those plays don't show up on the score sheet when you're converting third downs, you know. Those are the big plays, and those, for people like you and I that are going to watch this game again, that's what's going to show up on tape. And I'm sure Doug is going to say, hey guys, be more like Nelson, get into space, get open, and when you get the ball, get it in your hands and make some moves. And I want to see him. I want to see more plays of him to get into space. I want to see what he can do with his elusiveness. You know, it's like right there. They just got to work some more stuff in there. I know it's tough without Alshon, but I'm confident they could keep cracking down and put something in the playbook and make him, like you said, a wide receiver one.
Yeah. I'm with you, and I think that he is a very reliable player in short yardage situations. He's someone that, when you get the ball out quick, he's someone you want to go to because he has an explosive first step. He's someone that can get open quicker than maybe anybody on this Eagles offense just because of his explosiveness. But because of that athleticism, that run after the catchability that we saw at USC and we saw with the Eagles last year, he's also a guy I want to see that can get across the middle of the field. Like you said, get him in space to where he can run after the catch, and that's something that he wasn't able to do today. Day because he had to be Nick Foles' safety blanket pretty much 24/7 in this game. He kind of had to babysit him and make sure that he had someone to go to when he couldn't find Mike Wallace getting blanketed by Desmond Trufant and Zach Ertz wasn't getting open. And so that's the role Agholor had to play today. But again, Alshon Jeffrey coming back is, like you said, is going to be huge for that and Nelson Aguilar's success in 2018. Before we take another break, Gino, any other players to you that stood out on the Eagles, either on offense, defense, or hey, even special teams, because Cameron Johnson had a hell of a game at punter for the Eagles today. I mean, field position was a huge part of this, too, and I was concerned about him in the offseason.
Yeah, he did great, but before I touch on the good, I'm going to say one thing.
Yeah.
Trey Sullivan, what the hell are you doing near that ball?
So let me ask you something about that play. Can you, as a Falcons player, drag Sullivan? Like, if you're on special teams, are you allowed to drag a player to touch the ball, like forcibly move him towards the ball and try to get him to touch it? Because that's what, the minute I saw that play, I was wondering if that was even legal. And Les Bowen also touched on it on Twitter asking the same thing. I guess it was legal, but Trey Sullivan, yeah, he shouldn't have been anywhere near that ball, but when he was, it looked like the Falcons special teamer dragged him towards the ball, and I just was wondering if that was legal. It was just a crazy play that totally turned the tide of the game.
Legal or not, that can't happen, and the stupid mistakes and the penalties need to stop.
Jeremy Reeves wouldn't have made that mistake, Gino.
You read my mind. I was literally going to text you that during the game because I thought the exact same thing. He would not have done that. I really don't think he would have. I would have liked to see Jeremy Reeves on special teams personally, but Trey Sullivan, he probably got an earful from Fip and Doug when he got back to the sidelines. I'm sure he's going to take some crap when they're watching tape, but in this situation, you're bigger than that. You can't make that. But now turning to the good, I thought the Eagles defense all around was phenomenal. Chris Long creating havoc as always. Fletcher Cox, just there's nobody that can block him in the league. There really isn't. He eats every guard and center's lunch there is. Brandon Graham, we have to find money to pay him. I said it on Twitter, you have to pay the guy. He's
one of
incredible.
The best edge rushers against the run. He is dominant against the run.
Yeah, they did great against the run. I mean, Devonta Freeman, he went out with an injury. Coleman didn't have the biggest game either, but I mean, what? They barely had 12 points. Look at the field position that they were given. That was a true test of an elite defense. Malcolm Jenkins had a hell of a game, and the guy that caught my eye was Sidney Jones. I thought the one play that stood out to me is when the screen went out. He kept contained. He made the tackle, and that's exactly what I saw when I watched him at Washington and why I wanted them to draft him in the first round before he tore his Achilles, and then they ended up getting him in the second round. But
and we saw him in the preseason do that too, that tackling ability, the ability to shed blocks and get inside, and that's huge for a nickel corner.
Yeah, it is, and I thought he played decent coverage overall. He had tough assignments with Sanu, you know. He usually gets bullied off of pressure, I mean off of bigger receivers, I would say, but I think he did well overall. He was probably my MVP two, I would say, in my eye. But I'm a little biased towards Sidney. But I have to say one last thing about that defense. Rodney McLeod, get a different pair of gloves.
He's got to hit the jugs machine this week. Yep.
Or just put Rasul Douglas at safety, somebody we know who can catch a ball. But
I like that idea.
It's just
actually
mind-boggling to me how up and down Rodney can be. His variance is so high, and it's been driving me crazy the last few games I've watched him.
No, I feel that, and I think McLeod is one of the more underappreciated players at times in the defense, but then there's times like today where he's a liability, and they exploited him today. And speaking of Rasul Douglas, I know it was only the one play, but he drives you crazy because he'll let up this crazy touchdown that he was in position to play, and he just doesn't play it right, and he gives up a deep play, which he was prone to last year. But then he'll come around and make a huge play like he did in this one in the red zone. Just when you think Atlanta's about to march in and score a touchdown, he comes in for Ronald Darby, covers Julio Jones. Instinctually, just he has a nose for the ball. He has an instinct for it. Make sure he gets 2 feet and bounce, and he just comes in and he makes plays. And again, I talked about eating crow about Darby, but it's more because of how high I am on Rasul Douglas. And you texted me right after that, he's going to be a safety. Look, if they extend Darby, which if he played that well, I want them to do, although it's going to be expensive, if they do that, I still want Rasul Douglas to be on the field. I just think that playmaking ability, that pure ball hawk instinct, has a role on this defense. He's got to be on the field somewhere. And I mean, Sidney Jones is going to be on this team for a long time. He was really good in his debut today, so he's not going anywhere. Jalen Mills, we'll see. I still really like him on the outside, but Douglas needs a role on this team, and if it means putting him on safety, whatever, it's fine. I just want him to have the opportunity to make the plays that he did tonight. And again, it was only the one, but it was in a crucial situation, and he stepped up. The secondary, I mean, really the young corners, was such a bright spot today, and it never has been a bright spot since I've been an Eagles fan growing up. And today, Darby was a bright spot. Sidney Jones showed you why we think he can be an elite talent. Just, you know, that play against the screen. He was really good on a veteran receiver in Mohamed Sanu. And then Rasul Douglas makes a huge interception. The Eagles are set up for a lot of success when it comes to the cornerback position. And even Jalen Mills, he got beat on the double move, but he made some really nice tackles against the run as well. He was in on the ball at times, so Mills had an up-and-down game as well, but there were some ups as well to that. So if he is your third or fourth guy that you find promising in the secondary, it opened my eyes today during that game that how improved Howie Roseman has made this Eagles cornerback group in just a couple years, and obviously with credit to Corey Unlin as well.
Yeah, and I think one thing that was very underrated that I think indicates what they want in their secondary is that trade for DeAndre Hall. He's a swing between a corner and a safety, you know? They like those guys that can play coverage but also can stay up high, you know? And
Do you think that was telling for Rasul Douglas' future?
I really do. As something as little as that, it just ticked me off to think what they aspire. Because imagine next year you say you buy out Rodney McLeod. You have Malcolm Jenkins, an ex-corner. Rasul Douglas, an ex-corner. Ronald Darby, if you pay him, a great cornerback one.
Would you use the McLeod money to pay Darby?
Yep. Essentially. Yep. Sidney Jones, could be an elite talent in this league. Good corner already, in my opinion. And then Jalen Mills, franchise swag, he's great. Just imagine all that coverage ability and how much versatility you can do. You can send blitzes. You can keep one high back with Razul or Malcolm. The possibilities would be endless, and I think he offers so much at that position. And his natural instincts to close on the ball, to track the ball, are just phenomenal and not anything I would have expected out of him when he was coming out of West Virginia. I was not thrilled when they made that pick. I know other people were, but man, I have to eat crow on him. That's your guy, and I'm
both eating crow on the other guy's yep. guy in the secondary, and that's fine. I would like to do that all season.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that. Prove me wrong, and they have. And I said that Darby would lead this team in interceptions, but if Razul Douglas plays even 25% a game, I think he could lead the team.
He's in the lead right now.
He's always around the ball. Yeah, he is. You're 100% correct there.
So, yeah, they've both had big games today, as well as Sidney Jones. The secondary stepped up big time. Let's take one more break. We'll wrap up the show. The Eagles defeat the Atlanta Falcons 18-12, and we have it recapped for you right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, welcome back to the show, guys. Our final segment wrapping up the Eagles' thriller to start off the season. Football is back, and, man, it was a slow game. It was a brutal one to watch, especially for non-Eagles or Falcons fans through the first three quarters. But, you know, at least we got that big-time finish, and I don't want to play Atlanta anymore. That's it for me. I can't take the nerves anymore, the racing heart, the adrenaline, the mixed emotions of right now, the roller coaster that is Razul Douglas. You take on the same role against Atlanta, basically. It's just the roller coaster of emotions of, oh, man, they're going to lose this game. They're driving in. They're going to score. Oh, my gosh, wait, no, Jay Ajayi scored. Like, we're in a position. And then, wait, they have too much time. It's just back and forth, and it's always with Atlanta. And I just
– And then Julio Jones with a 30-yard freaking right. great catch like always.
And it came down again to a goal line stop. The Eagles have shown – the bend don't break mentality times 100 so far this year with the fourth and goal stand in the first half and then in the second half as well to win the game. And it wasn't just that. They were a great goal line defense in the preseason too. I look back to the Cleveland game where Jordan Hicks and Darby held Tyrod on that goal line stand against the Browns. So this is a team that even if they give up yards, it's a bend don't break mentality. It's very hard to beat this team and get into the end zone when they're in the red zone because on every level of this defense, you have all-star players. And let's not finish the show without mentioning one of the best inside linebackers, a top-five inside linebacker when he's healthy in Jordan Hicks. He was everywhere on the ball tonight. He finished with, I don't know what they're going to give with the one sack, if it's going to be a half a sack for him and Chris Long, but assuming it is, Jordan Hicks has a sack and a half. He was some great plays in coverage. Led the team in tackles, I believe. In the run game, again, we talked about how Freeman and Coleman struggled. Hicks was the main reason for that. And if, man, Nigel Bradham comes back next week, I don't know how you're going
to
ever run for more.
I'm licking my chops to see those two play together.
How are you ever going to run for more than 30 yards on this Eagles defense? It just seems impossible to me because Jordan Hicks is back.
I think we have to applaud Nate Geary and Camus as well. I thought they played great. And
they played
Geary,
really
you see what he can do. He could have took that one ball to the house, that was it. That's his safety mentality right there.
He just needed a couple extra inches to make that interception. He was so close.
He hits like a truck, and I think he played pretty sound, and I think Camus played pretty sound as well, and people were talking about that was going to be the part of the team that they had to exploit, and I think, one, it helps that everybody around them are Pro Bowl talents, as in, i.e. Jordan Hicks, who had a great game and shows why he's one of the best inside linebackers in the league, but you have to give them credit for sticking to it and stepping up to the challenge as well.
Yeah, I mean, and they played a lot. The Eagles normally are going to play mostly nickel packages, but a lot of the time Malcolm Jenkins would come in. Sidney Jones played a good amount of snaps tonight, but there was other times where Malcolm Jenkins would go cover Austin Hooper in the slot, or when Julio Jones got pushed inside, it seemed like they preferred Jenkins on him over Sidney Jones. So a lot of the time, Camus or Nate Geary got chances on the field. And Grugier Hill, that goal line stand we talked about, the first one in the first half, he bounced off two blocks to end up making that tackle on, I believe it was Tevin Coleman, or it was Devonta Freeman, and Jordan Hicks and Grugier Hill makes the play on that ball, and Grugier Hill absorbs two blocks, bounces off them, and makes that tackle. It's a position, again, that we thought was weak, no pun intended, because they're weak side linebackers. I'll show myself the room. But and it suddenly, today was a strength. They were both making plays, and again, with Nate Geary jumping that one pass, nearly taking the ball to the house, he was just an inch away from laying out and completing that interception. What a game for the defense. It just instills so much confidence that even if the Eagles' offense has an off day like they did today, they can still beat the best of the best in the NFL, and that's what the Atlanta Falcons are. They're a top team in this league. So just an incredible way to start the game, and I just cannot wait to get to next week against Tampa Bay, because if the games are as fun as it was today, this is going to be an amazing season once again for the Eagles.
And just think, don't have Carson Wentz.
We don't even have Carson Wentz yet.
We don't have Nigel Bradham, arguably three of our top five players on the team. You could argue.
Yeah.
And this was the test. I tweeted around lunchtime that I said it's going to be one in the trenches. The defensive line took over.
Yep.
That's why Howie invested it. They did their job, and if we need them to step up, we know they can. I was looking at it today. I was going through the 2016 schedule just quickly, and I was looking at how many games they lost by one score or more, and to see where they are now, that they have made two of the greatest four down stands in the red zone against elite offenses within the past 8 months. That is crazy. You'd think a couple years ago that those plays are going the other way. Absolutely, Atlanta's scoring those. Now I really don't have much doubt when that defense is tested, you know? It's just like second nature. It's like, okay, guys, we got to go win the game. Fletcher Cox, Chris Long, let's go. They go out and do it, and they're only going to get better. The cohesion's only going to get better, and it's going to be a fun season.
And there's times where teams that deal with some problems that the 2016 Eagles team did, just not closing out games, some teams just never learn and never grow from that and actually solve that problem with their team. And the Eagles, like you said, have just found a way to close out games on mostly defense, but on offense as well. You know, we talk about it. How many times did Carson Wentz, the rookie, have an opportunity to drive down the field and score for the Eagles to get the win in 2016, mm-hmm. and it just never happened. The closest they got was against Baltimore, where Wentz ran that touchdown, and they had the ability to tie it, or they went for two and ended up losing the game. But, I mean, it didn't really even count at the end of the season because they were already out of the playoffs. But then to this, where even when Foles is struggling and Zach Ertz is struggling, their offense manages to get down the field and score, not just a field goal to take a one-point lead, but to take a six-point lead because of the running back stepping up, Ajayi, Sproles, and Clement. This is, and I got to get Clement's name right, by the way. It's not Corey Clement, it's Corey Clement. I had a listener that
Clement,
tweeted
yep.
in, and there's a whole thing with him, I guess, in college. People would go back and forth with Clement and Clement. So our loyal listeners, I promise I will get Clement's name right on a consistent basis by the end of the year. But that's something that they learned how to do. They learned how to close out games and in big drives on offense, produce and score points, and that's something that some teams don't learn how to do. When they have faults like that that end up costing them playoff spots, they don't learn from it, and coaches get fired and people lose their jobs because of it, and that's the opposite of what the Eagles have done in these past 2 years, learning from that first year under Doug Peterson.
Yeah, it just shows you how cohesive they are as a unit, really, and it's not like they're all the same guys from last year, you know. They lost a lot of parts on that team. They brought a lot of parts in.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's the culture. It's what they do.
It's just not like anything. It's just another week for them. You know, it's just another situation. They're so used to this already.
Yeah. I would say that Doug has accustomed them to play chess while everybody else is playing checkers. They go into every drive saying, we can score or we're going to stop them. And that's just the mentality. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And you see it. They just perform. You saw it this game. You saw it against the Patriots when they had to go down and score. You saw it against Atlanta when they had to make a stop. It just keeps happening. And just to continue this and continue at this rate, how are they going to lose? How are they going to lose?
I mean, if you can't beat them when Nick Foles throws for 117 yards and a pick,
they have a bajillion penalties and a bajillion stupid moments,
yep.
How are you going to beat them? It's beyond me.
I'm with you. It's a great feeling right now to have, because there was just so many things that could have went wrong today and that did go wrong, and they still managed to pull out a win against a team that a lot of people are picking to win the Super Bowl. It was great. Lou DiBiase joining you here. Gino Camilleri recapping the Eagles' 18-12 victory. Gino, any parting thoughts as we wrap up the show?
I'm excited to see what they can do against the lesser opponent next week. If they're shell shocked from this game,
we're gonna get a breather.
Yeah, we got 10 days. That'll be nice. I'd like to see how they can do against a lesser opponent. Is it Tampa, if I'm not mistaken, or
yep,
is it
Bay.
In Tampa Bay? Yeah, I always get those two, Tampa and Indy, mixed up. Those two games, but yeah, we'll see what they can do. They're going out of town. See what they can do on the road. Keep up that mentality. Don't be shell-shocked from this game, and just keep plugging along one game at a time. You're 1-0, but let's play it like you're 0-0.
Hopefully this is a bounce-back week for the passing game, and hopefully the defense and running game can continue to dominate. For Gino Camilleri, I am Louis DiBiase signing off. This has been the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network. Eagles take it 18-12. They are 1-0, defeating the Atlanta Falcons. We will be back tomorrow with more content for you, just continuing to cover this Eagles team that is currently 1-0 in the 2018 season, and we got it all for you right here on Locked On Eagles and LockedOnEagles.com. For Gino Camilleri, I am Louis DiBiase signing off. Thank you for tuning in to the Eagles-Falcons post-game show. We'll see you tomorrow, and let's go Birds!
Fly, Eagles, fly. 1-0.